You're listening to Everybody Pulls the Tarp, the go-to podcast for high performers. I'm Andrew Moses. Each week, you'll hear my thought-provoking conversations with Olympians, pro athletes, CEOs, elite coaches, best-selling authors, and other high performers to uncover their secrets to success. Get ready to be inspired each week when we talk about leadership, teamwork, work ethic, and more. Are you ready? Let's go. This week, my guest is songwriter and country music artist Cassie Joy. In 2017, Cassie took NBC's The Voice by storm with a four-chair turn during her blind audition. And Rolling Stone even called it one of The Voice's top 10 blind auditions of all time. With all four coaches on The Voice vying for Cassie to join their team, she decided to work with country music icon Blake Shelton, and Cassie made it all the way to the live finals. But Cassie's journey in music started long before her time on The Voice. She performed publicly for the first time at the age of 5 at a Kansas City talent show, and then she began touring on the Country Opry circuit. After years of performing country classics, she was signed by Radio Disney at the age of 14. In college, she toured with a rock band and served as a music instructor at the School of Rock. For years, Cassie continued chasing her dream of being a country star with her tireless work ethic, passion, and dedication. And ultimately, her run on The Voice catapulted her music career to the next level. After the show, her sophomore EP, The Bright Side, debuted at number 19 on the iTunes country album charts. And her hit singles like Namaste, Senses Fail, and The Money are adored by fans all over the globe. All right, let's listen to a short clip of Cassie's song, The Money. Now, I've got to admit, when Cassie's music comes on, I am always singing along. So Cassie and I recently sat down to explore her journey and the success secrets powering her music career. We covered a wide range of topics, including her creative process, how she overcomes doubt, her biggest lessons from being on The Voice, her tips for chasing ambitious goals, and so much more. This is a really fun and inspiring conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So, let's pull the tarp and get straight to Cassie Joy. Cassie, where I want to begin, you have performed publicly since the age of 5, when you performed at a talent show in Kansas City, the song Angels Among Us. I want to ask you, what do you remember most about the early days of your music career?
I think, at that time, gosh, I mean, the first thing that popped in my head was, this will be easy, you know, when you're a little kid and it's like, I'm going to do that. I saw Brenda Lee or Tanya Tucker or Leanne Rimes being like 13 years old and just skyrocketing. And so my parents and I are like, well, talent show, and then we'll go to the mall karaoke contest, and then we'll be off to the races. It's just as easy as that. And so at that time, you know, it was less competition and competing and all that. It was just a love for music and a love for performing and the lights and the stage and the pre-show jitters and all that.
Do you think there's something to that, like that naivete that kids have when it comes to almost anything? Like, most kids don't really comprehend what's involved in any endeavor. Like, do you think that was a benefit to you early on, getting started so early?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty in being a child, is like, that's how dreams get born, is you don't know how hard and how crazy of a road and how just all the trials you're going to go through. And yeah, when you're just a naive little kid, you're just like, well, I want to be an astronaut. And you're just like, well, then I'm going to go do that, or I'm going to go be a superstar. And yeah, that's where dreams get born.
I remember when I was 12 years old and I told somebody I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. And my parents sat me down and said, like, you're not even one of the 5 best players on your team, you know, in Little League, and you're really kind of scrawny, and that seems like that's going to be a problem. So, like, we need to reassess the goals. But when you're a kid, you believe you can do anything. You believe you can do anything. So I'm curious, when you think about performing in that talent show and getting started at the young age of 5 years old, did you kind of find this dream first? Did your parents help you find this dream? Like, how did that all work together? And how enthusiastic were they about kind of toting you around to all these competitions and talent shows?
Yeah, it was definitely my idea first. I don't really come from a musical family or background, but I had found this cassette with Angels Among Us on it. And on the other side, it was an instrumental track. And I'm like, what's instrumental mean? And so then I found out, like, I can just hear my voice on this. And I just fell in love with that and told my parents, like, we got to do this talent show. And they're like, excuse me? Why? What? And it's kind of just been that sense of, like, let's just keep going. What's next? What's next? How much bigger can we go?
About hearing your own voice for the first time, like hearing your own voice against the instrumental version of a song that you knew well. Like, what do you remember most?
I think when I first started, I had this delusional confidence. Like, I would start singing and I'm like, I am nailing this. And like watching the videos back of like my first performance when I was five, it's like my parents and I just laugh. Like, it was just so nasal and I was such a little baby and so nervous and shy. But I don't remember it being like that. Like, I just was like, I'm on top of the world. I'm the best. I'm going to be the best. And yeah, I think it was just this delusional confidence that I had.
Delusional confidence. But did the confidence carry to other aspects of your life besides music? Because I know you played soccer at a very competitive level, track and field at a very competitive level. You were a member of the student council. Like, it wasn't just music for Cassie Joy throughout your life. Did the confidence translate to other areas as well? Was that just something you've always been able to bring to bear?
I think music definitely is like where I get any of my confidence from. I've always been a very shy kid. I used to like break out in hives if I had to speak on stage. But then once I started to get much more confident in my music, like, that would kind of spill out into other areas of my life of, like, I almost become this character of, like, Cassie Joy and not just Cassie. And, like, so sometimes, like, I'll notice I have to kind of bring out that character in social situations and, like, let that confidence seep out into other areas.
That's really interesting. Are there things that you do now that you've trained yourself when you get into a situation that maybe you would otherwise be typically uncomfortable or less comfortable than when you're on the stage performing as Cassie Joy, that you're able to harness some of that Cassie Joy stage presence?
Yeah. There is a quote by the late, great Tupac Shakur that I heard recently. And he says, like, if you're ever like doubting yourself, do what got you invited. And so I always think about that. Like, if I'm playing, you know, like a couple summers ago, we got to play Gulf Coast Jam. And that was with Florida Georgia Line and like all these like gigantic names. And I'm like, I have no business being here. But then you have to remind yourself, you got invited. They know you're here and they know why they invited you here. So you just got to remember and do what got you invited. And that has always just really stuck with me.
That is so powerful. And I think you can apply that, anybody listening can apply that to whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah, to anything. It's so simple, but so profound.
So simple, but so profound, Cassie. So I'm curious, like, if we just kind of fast forward a little bit, I mean, you talked about the talent shows and some of these competitions. When did it get more organized and air quotes, like, professional for you? Was it the Radio Disney opportunity at about the age of 14? Like, when did it, you feel like things got more organized?
Yeah, it would probably be the Radio Disney stuff. That's when it wasn't just my mom being my momager and the briefcase was a cat folder that we had, like some Lisa Frank business, I don't know. And yeah, once I like signed with Radio Disney, then it became like we had rehearsals and we had to go and get our headset fitted and the choreography and the outfits and all that. So yeah, that's when it did seem like, and I was like getting paid. That's when it was like, oh, level up.
Do you remember feeling like a change? Like, do you remember feeling more weight on your shoulders when you signed with Radio Disney and you were a professional?
I think I remember always thinking, I wouldn't think of it as more weight on my shoulders. It was more like excitement of, like, with every next thing, like getting into the Opry circuits, it's like, this is it. We've made it. Oh my God, it's going to happen. And then get signed by Radio Disney. Oh my God, it's going to happen. It's happening. And then we move to rock music, School of Rock. It's happening. And so I feel like it's just always been kind of just what's next, what's new, what's more.
So how do you balance that? Because everybody listening is probably working towards something in their own life, right? And you have this constant battle, I feel like, with between kind of looking at the big picture and the long-term goals and the long-range plan, and then kind of like what's in front of you and making the most of the opportunity that you have today, right? And that's constantly a balance. How did you reconcile those two things?
So I follow a lot of like personal development and like growth people. And Ed Milet talks about blissful dissatisfaction. And I have always been obsessed with that. Once somebody put those words together, I was like, that's what I'm always feeling, is getting your mind thinking about not I'll be happy when. It's I can be happy now, even though it's not everything that I'm, that we haven't hit the goal yet, but you can still be happy in that moment before reaching the big goal. So it's, you know, appreciating every step of the journey, knowing it's never, you're never going to get to the end. I mean, I'm sure Taylor Swift is like, I still haven't done that one thing I want to do. You're never at the end where you're like, ah, oh, I did it. Take a nap now.
I think you're 100% spot on, Kathy. And I think the reason that most people who achieve any measure of what we would define as success in whatever industry gets there because they are just never satisfied.
Yeah.
And they never want to, you know, and they never feel like they reach the top of the mountain and they can just take a nap.
Yeah.
I almost see it as like climbs and then like plateaus and then climbs and plateau. Like, you know, you get to like a, you start at the base camp of a mountain and then you climb and then you get to like another camp and you, mm-hmm. you rest a little bit and then you, and it's about, I think, enjoying both. It's enjoying the climb and it's enjoying those moments where you feel like you can take a little bit of a breath because you've reflected and realized that you've accomplished something really cool. One of the exercises that I try and do is like I'll look at my calendar for a year or two prior, like periodically. So I'll go like today's date, like a year or two ago, and I'll look what I was doing. And it kind of takes me back and transports me to that moment. And then I think about some of the things that I was doing there at that moment, which were great. And I was very, very happy about and grateful for. And now I think about what I'm doing today or what I've done since then. And it's a really powerful tool that I've used to try and kind of teleport between time and gain a greater level of appreciation for everything that I've accomplished.
Yeah, I do that with my camera roll too. There's a whole, I'm looking at it right now, a 29-page booklet that I printed out by Mel Robbins, where she has you go through your prior year. Because, you know, you can get done with a year and it's the winter scaries and like it's the slow time of the year. And you're like, man, this last year really sucked. Like we didn't do anything. Like I can't even remember any big milestones we reached. And then you go through your whole camera roll for the year and you're like, my God, this was when like we met with CMT and we did this and we played this. And there's just so much that life moves so fast and it's just so like messy that you forget about all the amazing things that you did. So like, I love that activity of just like quit crapping all over yourself. Like you had a good year and just take a day and look back at it and pat yourself on the back. You made it through.
You made it through. One of my friends and supporter of Everybody Pulls the Tarp and an author who writes on all things kind of high performance, this guy named Alan Stein Jr. And Alan says that you should look at everything that you do 2 years ago and you should think it's like unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. Like that should be your goal. Like you should be proud of it when you put it out. And then whatever you put out 2 years later should have grown so significantly that it's not even recognizable.
Yes.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who've achieved a lot of success who could say that. And they could look back at stuff from a number of years ago and say, wow, I don't know if I would put that out today, or that makes me kind of cringe a little bit, but it can be, it's a really powerful exercise.
Yeah. And if you're not seeing it like that, then like, if you look like the same exact person, you're acting the same, you're in the same group and all of that 2 years later, like what kind of growth did you even do? You know?
Yeah. Let's talk about
when you're dying, man.
You've always got to be focused on growth, Cassie. I know you are. So Let's fast forward to 2015. We're going to get to some of all the milestones here in the Cassie Joy story so far. So 2015, you make the decision to move to Nashville. What goes into that decision? Take me through your mindset at that point. And what was it like when you ultimately got to Nashville?
Yeah, I had just recently at that time gotten out of my rock band that I was in called In Like. And I had just met my now husband, Brian, and him and I were just kind of talking about next steps. Like, I kind of took a year off of music because I didn't know what to do. I had lost my band, and now I had never like gone solo since I was a little kid because I was in the Disney girl group. And he really encouraged me to go solo, and I wanted to go back to country music where it all started. And he just kind of encouraged me, like, we just knew I couldn't be in Kansas City to get done what we knew had to be done. And just him being so supportive and being like, yeah, go to Nashville. I'll hold down the fort here. We had just bought a house. It's like the dumbest thing. We're like, just bought this house. And I'm like, I got to go to Nashville. And he's like, I know. And so, yeah, we moved to Nashville, or well, I moved to Nashville, and he followed about 2 years after that, I think. And yeah, you got to make big, big decisions and scary decisions to get big results, you know?
So he also made a very scary decision at some point, as I understand it as well. He left his full-time job, corporate job in Kansas City, and essentially became the Swiss Army knife, as you put it, for the Cassie Joy operation, and does a little bit of everything for you. Now, on this podcast, I call those people tarp pullers. And you're definitely a tarp puller because you lead by example and you go so far above and beyond to kind of build the community and your brand and follow your passions. But Brian is no question a tarp puller as well, because to me, a tarp puller never says that something's not in the job description. They're willing to do whatever it takes. And he helps manage your sound. He manages the tour schedule. I think he does some work on the tour bus or the mobile home, which we'll get to.
He drives the bus. He fixes the bus. I just left the pillows.
What do you think kind of happened for him in that moment? Besides obviously wanting to be closer to you, Cassie, of course. What do you think it was about what was going on in the Cassie Joy business, or what he kind of felt in his own career that like compelled him to make that such a significant shift?
Yeah. That's a hard question to answer because I still kind of can't believe he did that. Like, it's still like, what? Like, you know, I think, yeah, he just had a really great belief in me. And at that time, you know, we had all the voice hubbub going on. And so it was, I think, kind of a no-brainer at that time of like, it's clearly we're on a good trajectory. This seems less scary to leave behind corporate America and go work for your girlfriend.
It seems like on the surface, like something that's, it could seem obvious, but it could also seem really, I think, challenging for a lot of people to kind of make such a bold decision like that. But like you said, it's got to be rooted in self, in not only in the belief in you.
Yeah.
And the belief that he had and what the two of you could accomplish together. You mentioned The Voice. I've got to ask about The Voice. So in 2017, you take The Voice by storm with a four-chair turn during your blind audition. It was later ranked by Rolling Stone as one of the show's 10 all-time best blind auditions. You performed Blue by Leanne Rimes and ultimately decided to work with country music legend Blake Shelton. So I am curious, how did the whole Voice thing come together? Did you find them? Did they find you? Tell me about that.
Oh, trust me. I found them several times before this all happened. I had tried out probably 3 or 4 times for The Voice. I tried American Idol. I tried X Factor. I tried America's Got Talented X's, like any show I could find. And like at the time that like I just kept getting no's and wouldn't get through, I'd kind of given up on, you know, okay, the show, the reality show isn't going to be the path for me. We know this now. As I'm coming to terms with this, I'm on vacation in Minnesota with my family and we get a call from the Voice executive producers. And they're like, we saw your cover of Jolene by Dolly Parton on your YouTube channel. And if you could be to LA in 2 days, we'll give you a private audition. So no cattle call with 60,000 other people and all that. And I was like, that does seem this seems better. We could be onto something. I might not be better again.
This does seem better. I'm always amazed at how opportunity finds you when you stop looking for it in some way.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true.
There's something about it. And it's not like you had stopped looking for it entirely, right? You had just kind of maybe come to terms with this idea that maybe the TV show platform wasn't going to be your path to wherever you were going next. Mm-hmm. And then the phone call comes in. So how do you get ready and get yourself fired up for something 2 days later in Los Angeles, a format you haven't done before? Like, tell me about that.
Yeah. The getting ready process is hilarious. So we're in Minnesota on vacation on a lake at a resort at this time. So I only have like bikinis and sundresses and lake clothes, you know? And the closest store we could find that wasn't like a Tractor Supply was JCPenney's, and it was an hour and a half away. And so we got some sort of trendy getup for me to wear. And my parents had to drive me, I think, like 2 hours to the Minneapolis airport and flew out of there. I ended up getting lost at the Hollywood sign by myself, thought I was going to die, get kidnapped, but that's a whole other story. It was, yeah, a lot of memories from that.
So, I mean, just a remarkable audition. Like I said, you know, it's still like, I was looking back at it the other day and it just gives me chills. I can't even imagine how you felt. At one point later on, Blake Shelton said about you, she has this electric energy when she's on stage and has these unique things that she can do vocally. She's old school, but has a youthful energy about her. There is no stopping Cassie Joy. So I am curious, first off, I mean, how do you even process Blake Shelton saying something like that?
You don't? What? Yeah, it's still, I mean, it's been years now and I'm still like, say it again, louder.
You want me to read it again?
Yes, please.
So I'm curious, when you think about that experience, what was the biggest lesson that you took away? Because this wasn't like this was something new for you, right? I mean, you had been performing professionally for a long time. This wasn't like somebody who just had been singing in the shower and whose friend had kind of, you know, said, go audition for The Voice. Yeah. And you kind of like, this is like, it wasn't new to you, but it was new to the country and the world watching. But I've got to believe that there was big growth for you as part of that experience. Was there growth, and what were some of the biggest lessons, if so?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I was as prepared as one could possibly be. Like, I was used to crowds. I was used to traveling and singing for long, long periods of time. But you think you're prepared for something like The Voice, you have no idea. Like, I mean, just with the publicity, the voice lessons they give you, the choreography, the wardrobe, finding your own brand and like rewriting your bio and going through your old social media. And I mean, just that aspect of it, the almost everything that was off stage was just such a learning experience. I mean, like the vocal lessons I got was probably one of the biggest things I took away, were the private lessons they'll give you off camera. Incredible.
Like, technically, was there something like in particular that you feel like changed you as a vocalist?
Yeah, I was actually having a lot of vocal issues when I went onto the show. And I was actually having difficulty yodeling because my head voice, like your high, light, breathy voice, wouldn't come through. It literally sound like a cricket. And one of the vocal coaches was like, oh, here, coffee straws. Excuse me. And she got me started to sing through vocal or through coffee straws, which elongates your vocal track and gets everything nice and zipped up. I tell you what, like, I probably have coffee straws in my pocket right now. Like, they're always on me. I'm always singing through straws. It changed my life.
It just builds kind of a new muscle and like way you can kind of feel it so that you kind of know where you've got to be.
Yeah, it kind of trains you to actually use your tiny little vocal cords instead of all your throat muscles. And
all right. I understand. I understand.
Yeah, try it after this.
I'm going to go get some coffee straws. So what was the most surprising thing about the experience for you on The Voice?
I think something that I just didn't expect was that you don't choose most of the songs that you sing or what you wear, which is probably for the best. I mean, those higher up people in the fashion world, they know what you should be wearing. And it's probably not the Walmart outfit I had picked out for myself. But yeah, and you definitely don't pick your blind audition song. I just got extremely lucky that I happened to get a song that like I'd been singing my whole life, and it was kind of its own little niche with the yodel. But some of my other friends were not as lucky, and they got like weird blind audition songs that they're like, I've never heard of this. Why do they want me to sing Kelly Clarkson?
So like, how much time do you have between the time they give you your blind audition song and the time you have to go out on stage in front of the cameras and perform it for the judges?
So just the blind audition process of getting up to singing on the stage is a month long. So you have a month to have your family come in and do all the slow walks and all that stuff. And you're getting wardrobe, you're doing choreography, all of that stuff. It's a whole month. And then after the blinds, it moves a lot faster.
So like over the course of that month, at what point did you find out you're singing Blue by Leanne Rimes?
I think you know for that whole month. I feel like they tell you before you go back to LA, and then, gosh, I can't remember.
You have some time. If it's something that's like totally, that you've never heard before, or never sang before, you have time.
Oh, yeah.
But for you, you felt like it was just such a nice natural fit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was almost like, is this a joke? Like, how did I get so lucky with this song? I mean, like my friend Kenny P., he got a song he had never heard of before, and it wasn't necessarily his vibe, like his brand of what he normally sings. But sometimes the producers are doing that because they're like, we see something in you though, and this would be great for you. And yeah, I just got lucky that I was like, that's my bread and butter.
That's your bread and butter. So all the judges, like I said, a 4-chair turn during the blind audition. All the judges wanted to work with Cassie Joy. You ultimately select Blake Shelton, like I talked about. Just take me through that, you know, that decision. Were you like, if Blake turns, I'm going with Blake? Or was there any kind of debate in your mind?
I'd love to say there was a debate. And I tried to do a whole like, just shut up, Blake. It was just like a no-brainer, duh. And Blake actually sang in the competitions that I sang in as a kid. He was a part of American Kids. And then just him being a Nashville guy and knowing about playing down on Broadway and all of that and the lifestyle of country music and storytelling. I was just like, I got to go with Blake. You got to go with Blake.
So fast forward, we talked about Brian and his decision to join Team Cassie Joy professionally and go work for his girlfriend and now wife. In 2019, you guys were spending so much time on the road that you decided to turn the tour bus, which you called a joyride, into a mobile home. Another massive decision. What goes into that thought process and how did that all come together?
So I don't know if you've seen what my husband looks like, but he is 6'5". He is a very large man. And I first had the amazing idea of, we're traveling so much, we haven't unpacked since The Voice. It's been like 3 years at this point. Why don't we get a tiny home and we'll just pull it behind the truck? And Brian was like, what about any of this says tiny? That word is not allowed in this relationship. And so then we started like brainstorming. And we're like, okay, so maybe like a pull behind, like a fifth wheel or something. And then we're like, why don't we just look the part? Why don't we do the full tour bus thing? And so we got rid of our house. We sold everything that wouldn't fit in the bus and donated a ton of stuff. And yeah, everything that could fit in the bus, we just decided, let's put wheels on the dang thing and spread joy wherever the music takes us, because that's what we were doing anyway. And let's get rid of our suitcases finally.
I mean, this takes work from home to a new level, Cassie.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. So take me like behind the scenes now on like a typical day or a week in the life of Cassie Joy. Like, how much are you performing? How much are you creating? Like, take me through the processes. What does a typical day or week look like?
So this week is kind of a weird week. My parents are actually in town visiting from Kansas City. So in Nashville, it's kind of different. Like you could get a call from a friend that's like, hey, my buddy's out sick. Could you come in and play this 4-hour shift on Broadway for me? And when I get those, and if I have like some time off the road, it's so fun to get those calls and be able to just beat bop downtown, go play 4 hours of country music, doing what I love, and, you know, maybe go to a co-write after that or go catch an open mic. But yeah, my days are pretty much just full of music, full of the unexpected, a lot of computer time too. I do a lot of editing and all that. So got to wear all the hats.
You have to wear all the hats. I'm looking at so many hats behind you. There is no question, Cassie, you and Brian are tarp pullers, and you're going to forever be part of this Everybody Pulls Tarp family. People who never say it's not in my job description. They go above and beyond, do whatever it takes to power the success of the, you know, for the greater good. So you talked about co-writes, and you talked about kind of some of the business, you alluded to some of the business side, you know, of this and some of the design work and all this stuff. Like, when you need to get into a creative flow or creative state, what does that process look like for you?
I'll typically start with going through my notes on my phone. I've got like a crazy lyrics folder, and that'll sometimes just be a random thought that I had, and it's not pretty. It's not, doesn't rhyme or anything, but just an idea of like, what if there was a song about this? And then a lot of times, like if I need to get myself into a vibe, like I'm a little too happy right now and we're trying to write a sad song. A lot of times, like I'll hack into my old emails or like my old like AIM chat rooms and stuff like that, or like weird old like Zanga or MySpace posts that I've saved, just to like get back into that like brooding teen, like emo, all those big feelings that we had as teens and stuff. Sometimes that'll help spark something.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a weird answer, probably.
That is really interesting. And it's not too far afield from what we were talking about a little bit ago in terms of kind of that reflection on your growth. But you're, you know, going back to, like I said, I go back to my calendar. I look at what I was doing a year or two ago at this time. But you're using that mental time transport to put yourself in your shoes just at a different time. And then you're channeling that creatively.
Yeah. And sometimes that's hard because like you sometimes don't want to remember some of that stuff and you don't want to be like in a downer mood the rest of the day. But like, I remember having to do that with my song, Even Want To, that was on the Bright Side EP. And that was a solo write. And that was one that I specifically remember I got out my old Zanga account. I don't know if anybody listening would know what the heck a Zanga account is, but it was like our online journaling from back before Facebook and all that. But yeah, I would read back over all my dramatic journal entries, and that's kind of how I kind of remember that stuff. Cause I live a pretty happy lifestyle right now and I don't have a lot of drama to sing about or issues and all that. And so sometimes I have to get into my little bag of tricks or, you know, old memories. And
it's so interesting because one of the things that I've always wondered about songwriters in particular is like, are you writing about something that's just happening to you right now in the moment, or are you channeling emotions and experiences from the past? And you kind of just answered my question on that. And I'm sure it depends on the songwriter, and everybody has their own way of doing things. Maybe some people just like keep a notebook and they just write songs like right in the moment as they're experiencing something, and they can't kind of teleport themselves back. But I've always wondered, you know, like when you hear these songwriters and they maybe write a song about a relationship or a breakup that happened 15, 20 years ago and they're happily married today. Like, when did they write that and not release it till now? Like, and so I've always wondered, but maybe they're doing something like you're doing.
Yeah. And that's exactly how I wrote Senses Fail. And that was kind of a weird one to put out because it's like, how do you market it? Like, I want everybody to know this is not about Brian. Don't freak out. This is a high school thing. So yeah, it is always different. Like if, you know, if you're a happily married couple, but like I love a breakup song. I love a sad country song. And so for me, I also don't want to write about things that I'm not either living at the time or haven't lived in the past. So sometimes I got to pull from way back then, but it's always something I've lived.
what's something, Cassie, as we get ready to wrap up our conversation, like when you think about everything that you've accomplished so far, is there something that at some point you worried so much about that you just wish you hadn't?
Probably my appearance. I think just as a female, that's, and being a female, like in front of a camera or on a stage or in a spotlight, that's always the first thing we think of. And I think in these past couple of years, I've really noticed my style has changed and I've not cared less about what people think, but maybe I care less about what I think of me and, like, you know, just stop being so hard on myself. It's
You care less about what they think about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. And I'm curious because, just to double click there a bit, I mean, one of the things, just kind of watching your career and studying you a little bit more closely as I kind of prep for our conversation today, is just the social media presence and how active the social media presence is and how engaged the community that you've built on social media is. It's a really engaged community. And I would imagine that if appearance or how you look is something that you've worried about and contemplated at times, then I would imagine that social media could create some challenges for you as well. But you've built such an incredible community on there. How do you think about that part of your world? You're so public with so many things and the content is so engaging. How do you think about all that?
I think, yeah, as you were saying all that, I think I do have my fans to thank a lot for my change in caring so much about being perfect and all the things. Like, my fans on Facebook are so all about my no makeup posts and oversharing and just being the weirdest weirdo that I can be, and them just being so supportive of that. And almost like I can see the numbers of, they literally like it more when I'm not all done up. And that's been, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And I think it's helped me really hone in on, that's what country music is about, is realness and truth and not eyelash filters and all that crap. So I think, yeah, I've got a really, really, really great fan base to thank for that. And they'll talk with each other in the comments. And I just love how much, like, they've all become friends and they're my friends now.
It's incredible to see the community that you've built. So now, Cassie, as you look ahead, what is, in your opinion, the biggest area for growth for you personally and professionally as you look ahead?
Communication, probably. My response time on emails and texts and doing all of that. I have a hard time being a human. I feel like I'm just supposed to be a musician and on stage or in front of a camera, and the human side of life is a little harder for me. And that's where I could definitely grow.
Well, Cassie, there is no question that you are on a tremendous trajectory and you've accomplished so much. You've changed so many lives and you've built an extraordinary community that not only do you pull the tarp for, as I like to say, but as we just learned, you kind of came to this realization that in many ways they are pulling the tarp for you as well. And that is what it's all about. So, Cassie, yeah. I have had such a great time here getting to know you and talking about your story. And I hope we can do this again sometime to explore where this journey continues to take you and Brian.
Yeah.
You're a tarp puller on the joyride.
Yeah. Who knows where we'll be a year from now. We could be living in a helicopter. We don't know.
There's no way to know where this all goes. Cassie, thank you so much. And we'll have to catch up again soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, everyone. If you loved this episode, you might also enjoy my interview with Aaron Mattson. In January of 2023, University of North Carolina named Aaron its field hockey head coach. At the time, she was just 22 years old, and it was just 2 months after her graduation from UNC as a student. Suddenly, she was the head coach for the same program she had just finished starring in as a student athlete. And are you ready for this? In her first year as a head coach, she led UNC to a national title, becoming the youngest D1 college head coach to win a national championship. Be sure to find my conversation with Aaron in your podcast app. It will get you ready to take bold risks and defy conventional wisdom. no matter where you are in your personal or professional journey. Check it out and let me know what you think. Thank you for joining me this week. Be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes. And if you are like me and want a world full of tart pullers, then leave a review to help others find us. You can also follow me on Twitter at Andrew H. Moses. That's Andrew H. Moses. And be sure to sign up for my email newsletter at everybodypullsthetarp.com/newsletter. I'll share tips and insights to help you achieve maximum success and happiness. Today's a great day to pull the tarp. I am rooting for you. See you next time.